Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target, and thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we're here every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are interesting and topical and important, and meet people that we think you might want to know more about or that are making a difference here in Western New York, that are either researching or writing or doing something that you might want to know more about. I'm trying to think how I'm going to describe this, but I want to say that we are somewhat related to spooky Halloween. We were trying to think, who are we going to talk to that might scare everybody? And Jim was going to scare everybody for me, but I said, are we going to start out going boo or something like that? But he wouldn't help me out. So, Lisa, my best friend Lisa, she said, I know somebody that has something related to Halloween, sort of. I mean, it's sort of a stretch. A very famous author who has written books, a series of books about Jack the Ripper. And I think I'm friends with his wife. Lisa's friends with your wife. I don't know her first name, but thank you. And Lisa said, I'm going to ask him if he would come and talk to you about the series. And here he is now, and his name is Michael Hawley, and he is not only an author, but a teacher, a veteran. I can't describe all the things that he's done in his life, but he is an expert and a published and well-known author and expert in the field of Jack the Ripper, and has written a series. So I'm really excited because that is something that, for all the years, everybody always still refers to it and talks about, you know, of all the crimes that have ever happened in the world, that must be like, if there was a poll, it might be number one that people are aware of, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't know why. Do you? I mean, it's strange.
One is the name, Jack the
Ripper.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Because it isn't even our country, you know, and we've had so many, sad to say, incidents and in our own country, but this just sticks in everybody's mind. So let me start out by asking you a little bit about yourself, because I know that you are not just an accomplished author. I don't mean just. you are not only an accomplished author, but have like a really interesting background. How did you get up to where we are now being an author?
Well, as when I came to Buffalo, it was because I was a Navy pilot, and then I was 10 years active, and I went into the reserves, and I retired as a commander and stayed in the Buffalo area, one of the things, I graduated at Michigan State in geology and geophysics, and I loved the sciences, and so I wanted to get into teaching this way. And so what happened was, my passion's research, and so when I get into my master's with a paleontologist, Dr. Rick Batt, then he trained me how to do the proper style of research. And what I did was, there were a lot of different mysteries out there, and one of them was this case with who Jack the Ripper really was. And then in about 2009, I was waiting on a publishing company for my first book that I wrote, which is a completely different subject, called Searching for Truth with a Broken Flashlight. But while I was waiting, I was just, I saw an episode on TV about a Jack the Ripper suspect from Western New York, buried in Rochester, New York. And I thought, wow. So what happened was, because I also researched in family history, I found his gravesite, and the name spelling was changed, but I found it, and I actually YouTubed it way back in 2009. But what happened was, is in 1992, a retired British police officer, Stuart Evans, who was actually a Ripper researcher, this is like his 50th year this year. He's one of the top experts. And in 1992, a person gave him this letter that it was from the to a famous journalist at the time, this guy named Sims, but it was from the chief inspector of Special Branch in Scotland Yard. And he was chief inspector during the Ripper murders in 1888. Special Branch was the kind of the group like the CIA group, but they were in the know. And so this journalist asked about a completely different suspect. What do you think about this person? So this man, Chief Inspector Littlechild, said, I don't know about that guy, but this guy named Francis Tumblety, he's a very likely suspect. And he said, very likely suspect. And so that shocked Stuart Evans. And so Stuart Evans started doing research, especially because he'd never heard about this suspect at all for the 30-plus years he was researching. And he's part of the kind of the researchers that researched this. And so what he did was he found a lot of stuff in the United States. So 2 years later, he wrote a book. And so since then, though, because there's limited evidence, a lot of other experts have kind of limited the minimalized him as a suspect. Well, when I got involved, my passion's research, and I discovered a treasure trove of stuff. And so last year, I had finished a book. I did a bunch of articles, but I finished a book called The Ripper's Haunts, and I did a lecture in Baltimore on Francis Tumblety. And I kind of surprised the community. And book reviewer, who was a top author, is Paul Begg, and he said it was, when he said it was head and shoulders above the rest of the books, it really got a lot of attention. So then they asked me to do a lecture in Liverpool, and I did that last month on the same suspect. But we discovered even more material this year on Francis Tumblety. And so my sixth book is getting edited right now. And what happened was, is about a week and a half ago, I was flown to Dublin, Ireland, to film for the Travel Channel an episode of The Legend Hunter, which is going to be starting on March 2018, and they are absolutely convinced this was Jack the Ripper. Now, me as a researcher, I can never say 100% this is Jack the Ripper, because that ruins your researching ability. What happens is once you're confident, then you're stuck. Try to keep as less bias as you can. You want to keep on researching and look at it as best you can. But we're human, so. But what happened was, is Francis Tumblety, when he was arrested by Scotland Yard, he was, at the peak of the murders, he was one of the key suspects. Nobody saw the murders occur. So nobody had anything hard evidence. So what happened was, is they did have hard evidence on him for gross indecency. He was gay. And so he had letters in his pocket that showed that he committed those. So what they did is they arrested him for gross indecency. And so basically what happened was, is once they had the grand jury and they returned a true bill, he was convinced that he was nailed. So what he did is he sneaked out of the country and the murder stopped. But because when he came back to the United States, gross indecency was a misdemeanor charge, was not extraditable. So he stayed in the United States for the rest of the time and got really bizarre. We found some recent evidence, 46 sworn testimonies from, he died in 1903, and there was a challenge against his will. And these testimonies were very revealing on him. But he's quite an interesting character. But he was the guy that he actually owned a collection of uterus specimens.
You're serious?
Absolutely serious. Right. And originally, when we heard that, a man named Colonel Dunham reported that during the Civil War, what happened was, is Francis Tumblety was he came to America in 1847. And what happened was, is he, during the potato famine, and he settled with his family in Rochester, New York. And so he was 17 at the time. And what happened was, is he hooked up with alternative medicine doctors, a French cures doctors first, but then an Indian herb doctor. And so what happened was, by 1856, we find Tumblety in London, Canada, professing to be a full-fledged Indian herb doctor. By within 3 years, he was in Toronto, and he had over, of today's value, $1 million already. He was he was the best advertising Indian herb doctor. And so then he So then he got himself into trouble because he'd always say he was a medical doctor as well. And by the time he went through Canada making so much money, exploiting these people, claiming that he could cure all, but he really couldn't. But back then, normal medicine hurt, as in they still used bloodletting. And so allopathic medicine was still using mercury, so it was always better out than in. So if someone went to the doctor, it hurt a lot. But botanical medicines made you feel better. Even today, we have a lot of kind of that botanical medicines. And then but he would claim a little bit more. So by that time, and he would focus on the rich, and so he was making quite a bit of money. And so then, but he one of his patients died in Canada, so he had to sneak out because they were gonna go after him for manslaughter. But he sneaked in back into the United States. But he continued, and he still made a lot of money. In the meantime, he had two things he was doing. One is he was really nasty towards women because he had this bitter hatred of women. Not all women, but widow or maid, meaning any woman that could seduce young men away from their true lovers, older men. That's what he believed. And he blamed women for the curse of the land. As in, yes, the Adam and Eve story, right at the very beginning, it was Eve that deceived Adam. And so he really believed that. And so, and that's what Chief Inspector Littlechild said right in 1888, is that his huge file that they had on Scotland Yard showed that he had this bitter hatred of women. And then so, and that year of January 1888, he told a Toronto reporter that he was in constant dread of sudden death because of kidney and heart disease. And so Jack the Ripper stole two uteruses, a kidney and a heart, matched them. I mean, and so there's more to it too as well.
Can we go back? Wait, first, I'm sorry. I just want to tell everybody that I'm so fascinated that I can't even stop to tell our listeners what we're doing here. We're talking to Michael Hawley, who is an author of the Jack the Ripper series and author of other pieces as well, but we're just kind of so enthralled with this. Can we go back on the Jack the Ripper in case there is somebody who like doesn't remember or doesn't know about the crimes, why they were so important in history?
What happened is in 1888, right about that time was the first time that we had transatlantic cable, and so news would be within hours to somebody in Montana from something in London. This just happened from the 1870s, and so now that people all around the world could see anything that's happening in London. And so the major New York newspapers had London correspondents. They were European correspondents. They were actually war correspondents, basically. But anything that happened in London was, I mean, they would send it off as quick as possible, especially since London was 5 hours ahead in time. And so what went on at that time was there was, now, between 5 and 15 murders of women in the poor East End, usually the Whitechapel district, or Spitalfields, which is a neighboring district, but it's usually the Whitechapel district they talk about. And these were brutal murders, and especially 4 to 5 of them have a very very similar signature to them, you know, the throat cut deep. And then there's some evisceration going on as well. And so this mutilation was unusual. And then so strangely, though, November 31st, the Nichols murder, when you looked at that murder, was kind of the first one modern experts consider as a Ripper victim. There were actually two murders before, one in the spring and one about a couple weeks prior, that Scotland Yard and also the public thought that there was a series of murders going on. So they didn't know what serial killer meant, but the murder spree. So when the very first Ripper victim was killed, they were already thinking of a serial killer in a way. But then a week later, when Annie Chapman was murdered, it was so near like Mary Nichols' murder, you know, with the neck almost decapitated. But Polly Nichols was, there was an attack to the abdomen, but it looked like she was interrupted. And so then the Annie Chapman murder was that they stole the Jack the Ripper after murdering. It was more of an M.O. situation with the neck, as in what they're doing is trying stopping the heart so when he could eviscerate, there was not a lot of messy. It wasn't that messy. So what he took the uterus, the womb. And but he also took two rings. It was the only inanimate object taken from any of the Ripper victims. So people don't understand why, but in the case of Frances Dumbly, we do understand why, because those rings were, it was the keeper ring and the wedding ring of Annie Chapman, who still had those on. And Dumbly abhorred, hated anything to do with the male-female union. And then so that was the only thing on those Ripper victims that was symbolic of that. So, so that happened. They call it it was in 1888, the Autumn of Terror. And so after Polly Nichols was murdered, then Annie Chapman, September 8th, then about September, at the end of September, there was a thing, two murders happened at the same evening. They call it the double event now. But Elizabeth Stride was murdered in Whitechapel, but then just outside of Whitechapel in the City of London district, in Mitre Square, Catherine Eddowes was murdered, and the uterus was taken from her as well. And then so then no murders occurred in October, and then November 9th is when Mary Kelly the last was murdered indoors, the only one that was indoors. So that it really shocked the world, because it was a time where the press were, they're competing with each other as well, so there's a little bit of, they can also have little drawings and little images on their newspapers. And so the name, though, Jack the Ripper, didn't start until after the double event, when there was a letter that was given, and the letter said, was titled Jack the Ripper at the end. But that Chief Inspector Littlechild explained that was not from the killer.
I was just going to ask you, well, you read my mind, so I was going to say, where did the name Jack the Ripper come from?
And Chief Inspector Littlechild said it was probably a reporter or two reporters from the Central News Agency. And that was in the same letter that Chief Inspector Littlechild mentioned Frances Dumbly for the first time.
Did they think that the serial killer, that because of the modus operandi, because it's so dissimilar and so gory and unusual, that it was one person?
At that time, especially the man that took over afterwards, a man named McNaughton, who was convinced that it was five of them, we call them the canonical five, that all of them have
similar injuries.
Mm-hmm. Now, with offender signature, though, let's say, for example, display. Now, the first four victims, if they were, they were outdoors, and he eviscerated within minutes. That's why a lot of the surgeons back then thought this man must have had anatomical knowledge.
Training. I was just going to ask you that. Didn't they suspect somebody that knew what they were doing, you know, as far as
right. Exactly. And it wasn't medically. It wasn't perfect, but it was fast. Catherine Eddowes was eviscerated within minutes because the patrol constable came by within minutes, and then the body was still steaming, and so the person vanished. And then but then the indoors murder on November 9th, Mary Kelly, the person had hours with the victim's body. So then there would definitely be display, so you could see more offender signature there, as in the display, what, you know, the personality or what this killer was trying to say or experience.
And somebody wrote a letter claiming that they were Jack the Ripper, or
there are dozens of letters.
Yeah.
And so the famous letters are the Dear Boss letter, which has Jack the Ripper written on that. And then the reason why they took that seriously is because he claimed that he was going to take the ear, and then that next murder, the part of the ear was taken. And then there was this letter, the corresponding letter of the same author called Saucy Jack Letter, that made them very, Scotland Yard, think that might be an authentic letter. What's important for us about that is because there were Americanisms in there. And this is the first time they were thinking maybe that the killer might be an American doctor. And then so then soon after that, there was this letter called the From Hell letter, which the movie with Johnny Depp, From Hell, stems from. That From Hell letter had a kidney with it. And that victim, the previous victim, they took the kidney. And so here was a kidney with the letter that went to the news agency. And then so today, lots of people, if there was a letter that would be considered authentic, that would be the best possibility.
Now, how did they, I don't know, we talk about cold cases, you know, here in America. How did they just stop investigating and never find the person who, you know, was responsible?
Well, what happened was,
I guess that's the big question, right?
Well, after November, you know, for example.
And when did they stop? That's a good point.
Well, the murders just stopped? Well, the first thing was, when Tubblety sneaked out of the country and went back to the United States, we have record newspaper accounts of Scotland Yard detectives in the United States trying to keep an eye, trying to investigate Francis Tumblety. And then the two other main suspects that the experts take seriously, there's a few of them, but one is Kosminski. He was put in an insane asylum. The murder stopped. And another one is this Druitt, who he committed suicide, and the murder stopped. So we have the murder stopping in a way. But what happened was the next year there was another victim. And so Scotland Yard thought that victim, and the next year, too, they were Jack the Ripper victims. Here's Tumblety back in New York, so that took Tumblety off the radar screen. So they ignored Tumblety. But then only years later, McNaughton, who kind of took over the case was never kind of closed, but they took all the detectives off the case after 1889, so you could see that they kind of gave up on this, but McNaughton continued, and he was convinced that Mary Kelly was the last murder, November 9th, which Francis Tumblety was here there at the time.
I'm assuming, because we all watch, you know, Law and Order and on Criminal Minds and all that, that the police of Scotland Yard kept certain facts to themselves that about the murders that only so that only the murderer would know.
Yeah.
So that when they did find the person, obviously they, you know, they would. Other people are going to confess, and people are always saying, oh, I did this, or I know who did this,
right.
But the police know, or what do they call them, Scotland Yard investigators,
right.
Or
yeah.
Know that it's like a copycat. It's right. Not the right person.
Well, absolutely, and that's what's caused confusion today, because when you look at the newspaper accounts, which is what we have a lot, Scotland Yard wasn't always up front with them. And so, and that's what we see with the case where, let's say, for example, the coroner back then was convinced and told the press that he believed that Jack the Ripper might be trying to sell organs, because just a year before, or just within that few months ago, there was a American medical student that went to medical schools asking to buy uterus, the uterus specimens for £20 apiece. And so... So then, but what happened was, is then newspapers got a hold of a report that said that a Philadelphia gynecologist, a seasoned physician, was the one that was asking for that. So then, next thing you know, 15 years later, we have reports that Scotland Yard was still took that seriously. Well, if it was really the Philadelphia gynecologist, then he wasn't there during the murders. Why would Scotland Yard consider to take that seriously? So you could see that there was inside communication. That's what was is interesting about Chief Inspector Littlechild's private letter that did not expect to go public.
How did you, of all the research that you could have done, of all the subjects that you could have gotten interested in, being a pilot, being in, I can't even name what you said you were specializing in studying and teaching now, how did you get interested in this as the subject?
Well, the thing about paleontology is when I'm collecting the fossils, it's the first time you've seen these fossils in just millions of years, but also there were questions that the previous researchers had that we answered, and it was fun to kind of discover. And so when in 2009 I found out here's one of the prime suspects is buried in Rochester, New York.
Oh, that was what did it.
And then
yeah.
So that did it. And so then I found out when I looked at the research from a physical science background, seeing that these people, their research, they focused on here is their data, and then here's their logic to a conclusion. Well, a lot of people say, well, that's very convincing. But the problem is sometimes you don't know about cherry-picking data and was all the data used. And so we focus always on the data. So I went for the data, and I realized that data was flawed in a lot of cases. And then I just discovered more. So then this year, we found out that Francis Tumblety, now he was... He died in 1903 in St. Louis, and he had upwards of $3 million in today's value. For the last, ever since the Ripper murders, he lived in the cities as a homeless person. Yet he had expensive jewelry in one pocket, and then he had cash in the other. And one of the receipt for $140,000 from his New York bank. So what happened was, is he would always go and try to molest young men, and try to and so he'd go to jail sometimes for that or get in trouble. But he'd always show these to show that he was more of a high society person, so treat me as such. Yet he dressed like a tramp, and so it was really strange. And even in 1895, a neighbor saw him in Rochester, New York. She was walking the cities in the streets, and she sees him in a dark alley, just his hands, and he's just kind of quiet. I mean, so Ripper-like. But what
did
happened?
Did he commit any? Do they suspect that he committed any murders when he came back to America, or just these other crimes you're talking about?
Well, there's two answers to that. But before we get to that, what happened was, is in some of those sworn testimonies, what happened was, is the family members sued because he would only give a third of the family members any money and nothing to the rest. So they said that this guy was not of sound mind and body, therefore his will is null and void, and that was their goal. But what happened was, is all these testimonies, there was a young man that worked for the New Orleans Police Department, telegraph operator, that had to admit in 1881 that he tumbledy paid for his prostitution, male prostitution. So for 20 years, he would meet Tumbledy in Mardi Gras. And so he even got married, this Richard Norris. Well, Norris said that in 1881, this is a few years before the Ripper murders, he was smoking a cigarette, and Tumbledy pulled that cigarette out of his mouth and gave him a cigar, which we knew Tumbledy smoked cigars, and said, he goes, there's two things bad for young men, cigarettes and nightwalkers. They should all be disemboweled. At the same time, he showed him his collection of surgical knives. And when you look at all the experts, they talk about surgical knives are probably what Jack Ripper used. This, we just discovered this, and that's one of the reasons why they asked me to talk in Liverpool, and also I went to Dublin, is because of this shocking material that here it is, a key suspect, and we have this, a Ripper-like stuff before the murders. Now, did any murders happen afterwards? The FBI says the first thing they say is, it is a misconception that serial killers continue to kill all the time. Sometimes they do, especially if they're sadosexual, as in a sadistic like Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer. Well, Francis Tumbledy, his motive was not sadosexual. It would have been anger retaliatory and reassurance oriented, is what some of these experts that have looked at it, that are not Ripper experts, they're experts in forensic scientists, Dr. Brent Turvey, and so they looked at it and matches Tumbledy this hatred of women, especially if he blames them for the curse of the land. Here's a man that thought he could cure all, and he couldn't cure himself.
That is so amazing. It is also fascinating, and it is interesting that after all these years, all hundreds of years gone by, people are still interested and excited and, you know, intrigued by the whole subject. We thank you so much. We've been talking to Michael Hawley, who is an author of the Jack the Ripper series, as well as other. And you can find his books anywhere?
Yeah, my website's the fastest. It's michaellhawley.com. And you'll see that what I do both nonfiction and fiction, and that's the series. And the fiction has been re-edited with Sunbury Press. And so the Ripper's Hellbroth is actually out this week, which is actually the fiction version of the Ripper's Haunts, which is the nonfiction version. So coming up, the publisher promised to have my next book, Jack the Ripper Suspect, Dr. Francis Tumbledy, be published before the Travel Channel show is.
Okay, check the website, everybody, and check the Travel show, and remember, you heard it here first on Target. Thank you so much for talking to us, and happy Halloween, everybody, and thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.